Welcome to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is Dr. Lasolala, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College and co-host of the broadcast. Doc, it's always great to have you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here.
We have today a guest that we've had on now for the last two broadcasts, and our listeners are certainly no stranger to Tim Jordan. And Tim, you are the pastor of Calvary Baptist in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Is that right?
Been there for 30 years, yeah.
And the reason you're on the broadcast, other than the fact that you're here at Heart Conference, is because you're our buddy.
True.
And we like having our buddies on because, number one, you don't make fun of us, at least openly on the air, we're having these things. But secondly, your ministry has been a very significant one in our lives, and I know Doc has said the same things in previous broadcasts. But we've been talking together about what it means to be light, and you're walking us kind of through your thinking of what Matthew 5 records the Lord saying about us believers being the light of the world.
Right. He, in verse 13, 14, and 15, and actually down to verse 16, when he tells his listeners that they are light, he describes them earlier on in what we call the Beatitudes with these qualities that we're familiar with. They're not new terms. You know, many unbelievers know the term Beatitude and could name one or two of them. But to really understand how they're lived out in life and know that that is what God is actually expecting and that really is what people need to see, that's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we were doing is just looking at the Beatitudes, depending how you number them, I go with eight, but these Beatitudes partially describe what somebody who is really being the light to the world that Christ wants us to be lives like, looks like, feels like, operates like day by day in their real day-to-day life.
The way you kind of put it to us, you know, we've talked a little bit about it on a previous broadcast. And those of you listening who are interested, you may want to pick up the previous broadcasts on our website, www.thewordforlife.org. But, Tim, you were talking about, does your neighbor have a neighbor? And that was a very penetrating way of putting it.
As I was wrestling with it, actually for a long, long time on how to put it, that's what kept coming back to me. The most practical way to deal with this issue in my own life. Does my neighbor have a neighbor that's like this? Because if they would have a neighbor like this, it doesn't guarantee they would come to Christ, but it would guarantee that they saw him and would have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that if they saw him, his qualities, his compassion, his care, his purity, not just the positives and negatives, the hards and the softs, but if they saw him, that would be far more powerful than just hearing about him in a track or from me doing door-to-door visitation, which is a good thing, but it would be far more powerful if they saw him
mm-hmm.
in my life.
In that passage, it says, "Let your light so shine before men so that they may see your good works." Are these the good works?
These would be the good works that he's talking about. I mean, I'm certain it goes beyond this because he's going to go on after this context and talk about other things that mm-hmm. they should be doing. But these are illustrative. They're specific examples of what these good works would be. And when these good works are seen, lack of a better word for us, it will encourage, it will motivate
mm-hmm.
even an unbeliever to have to say good things about God.
You were talking about one that was incredibly convicting to you, and that was the idea of being merciful. And Doc, you were sharing right at the end of our last broadcast, and I think it would be worth revisiting briefly how the Lord gave you that same opportunity to really show a neighbor, in a sense, that you loved him.
Yeah, it was this morning, actually, after the service last night, and I was made aware of a man whose wife had left him, a man that I played veterans hockey with, and he did not have the greatest personality. You know, in other words, God had to love him through you. And after that message last night, I obtained his work number, and he answered the phone. And I identified who I was, and I says, "I want you to know I love you. I've heard you've gone through some difficulty. I want to take you to dinner, and I really want to help bear that burden with you." And he said, "I wasn't prepared for any of this." He said, "The whole thing came as a shock to me." And I thought, well, I'm going to put into play that where he can mm-hmm. get a demonstration of love that is from a believer who genuinely picks up the pain that he is carrying. And that is what I was really able to see based on the prompting of that message again last night. of demonstrating that instantly, even though he's not next door neighbor, he is someone that I see along the way.
And as important as handing a tract out and those kind of things, right. This is a very powerful way.
Right.
To do what you're talking
about.
It's
interesting because the word neighbor, just recently in church I was studying the word neighbor because I had to do it for something I was doing. And the idea of the word neighbor in the Bible is not something I choose. It's not the person I choose to live next to. It's someone that God chooses to put next to me. So it might be my neighbor physically, or it might be the guy when the traffic's backed up and you have to get out of your car and you know, what am I going to do for the next 2 hours? So I get off the expressway and suddenly, without my own choice, I am next to somebody.
Yes.
And that's the idea, because literally it means to be near.
Mm-hmm.
And so loving your neighbor is the one that God puts next to you.
Yeah, that's
even
good.
On the airplane. You know?
Right. That's good.
Well, that really is powerful because, I mean, we're sitting here in the studio, but people are listening to us all over. And providentially, they're going to meet neighbors today in that sense of the word.
Right. And ask who is hurting.
Right.
See, well, one of the things I can hurt.
Right. One of the things that characterizes Les's life that we all know that is a constant encouragement and conviction. It goes both ways where you see that in his life and you don't see it as in your own life as it ought to be. And it's a great encouragement to me. Is the personal relationships, because he's as busy as I am or you are, running around doing stuff, deadlines, meetings, stuff to do, places to go, people to see, but not in any kind of bragging way. In the natural conversation of his life, he's always going to be talking about people he's been talking to, people that he knows. So even though he is always in a hurry, you would never know that
right.
to meet him, because he sees the person he's meeting as his neighbor, and he's not rushing off. He's got 10 other places to go. But when you're with him, he's with you. And when you look at the opportunities he's had to have influence on leading people to Christ, on encouraging young families, even as he's speaking about encouraging an unbeliever who's going through a hard time, the strength of his testimony is that he has genuine love, but he also is engaged enough so that they see it and they can feel it. And that's an amazing testimony in a busy life. Because most of us dismiss it like, yeah, I should do that. I'd like to do that, but I'm so busy.
Well, and the verse says that when we see that, we're not going to glorify less.
Exactly.
We're going to glorify God who enables him to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happens.
And that's exactly what we're doing here.
Right.
Yeah, and you realize our mission statement in life is to picture to this world what our God is like.
Mm-hmm.
To literally glorify him.
Yep.
But I think it would be good for him to go even quickly through some of these
lessons.
Yeah, like
what does it mean to be poor in spirit?
Okay. Just zipping through some of these in my recollection. Obviously, the word poor in spirit it means more than it looks like on the surface. But the idea really is being spiritually bankrupt, where I am aware of my own weakness. Which, strangely enough, you would think that would be something embarrassing or off-putting to other people. But in fact, it's something that's attractive. You know, the cocky, arrogant, and sometimes Christians come off this way. We know everything, we have all the answers, and just ask us and we'll tell you everything. And that really doesn't attract people to Christ. Somebody who knows they don't know, except for the grace of God, who can't do except for the grace of God, attracts people to them. And when we're poor in spirit, then God can do great things in our life. So then people don't get to see how smart Tim is or how strong Tim is, because that would not be impressive. If I live life aware of my own bankruptcy and living truly just because I'm doing so on the adequacy of Christ, then people get to see what God can do. I mean, even your children, which is off the subject here. But for my children to get to see what I can do, I thought, okay, thank you very much. But if I live dependent on God's strength and they see me not having all the answers, but knowing where to get them, not having all the strength, but knowing where to go, and then all of a sudden they get to see God at work in my life, you talk about a heritage, you get to see God. Mm-hmm. So they can see dad at work, or they can get to see God at work.
Right.
In a visible way in their dad's life. That's a precious gift, and it's a powerful gift. And you talk about being light and attracting people to Christ, even when it comes to family. If I live that spiritually bankrupt life where God's power can be seen in my day-to-day life, that's a tremendous
thing. Okay, let me ask a hard question. Because I can imagine, you know, listening to us talk here, we're all three preachers, and you know, we went to Bible college and all the rest of it. But, I mean, there are people listening who are everyday godly guys, godly women, who didn't have those opportunities, who are, you know, just doing the stuff of life. So what does poor in spirit look like in their life?
It would be with a wife or a husband, or let's go back to the illustration of with a son, or a coworker, but I'll go back to the son, and you can apply it anyway. It would be answering the question, Dad, are you ever afraid? Saying, yeah, sometimes I am. Actually, right now I am. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray. I'm going to obey God here. And I know God's going to work it. I don't know how he's going to work it out, whether that's with in the ministry some trouble you're facing there, or if it's at work, it's a layoff. So you come home and, you know, the pink slip rumors are around and your wife asks you. And typically we just kind of dismiss it. It's irritating to us. But poor in spirit would be, no, I don't know what we're going to do, sweetheart. I know God's good. I know God's going to use this for good. I don't know how he's going to use this for good. I know he will. What are we going to do? I don't know. But we're going to pray, and we're going to trust God's goodness, and something's going to happen. And when it does, and we get an answer, we get a direction, we get a deliverance, something happens, and we get through this on the other side, everybody's going to be going like, wow, that was God. Because we didn't know, did we, Dad? Nope. You know, and it's looking at each other as a husband and wife. How do we get through that? I mean, many times, my wife and I, when you look about the marriage issue that you grow through, it's like, how do we get through that? We have no clue. Except that we admit that we don't know. We admit that we don't have the ability to change ourselves. And we've got to go to God on this. And now he's going to fix us and direct us. We don't know. But he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, again, going back to this issue of light, that reflects Christ. And then nobody's impressed with me or the changes in my life, they're impressed with God who did them.
Yeah,
and you're not faking it. It's the truth. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Hey, boy, that was a great idea that you had there that fixed this thing at church or fixed this thing at work or fixed this thing at home. And it's like, yeah, it was a good idea, but it wasn't mine. I don't know where it came from, but God brought it together.
That's
and you,
right. Mm-hmm.
Lord knows you're not being falsely humble. You can't take credit for it.
Right.
I mean, you can, but you'd be stealing. It wasn't your idea.
Right.
It was God's.
Yeah, it's a whole position of dependence.
Right.
Our own bankruptcy, but his adequacy.
Right. And normally we feel like that's something we shouldn't show our mate. Got to be strong. I'm the man. Don't show your wife weakness. Like she doesn't already know. Okay. Or with their children, the same thing. I got to show strength.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
But really, I have two options in life. I can either show my strength, which is whatever that's worth, or if I'll admit my weakness and fears, but confidence in God, they'll get to see God's strength.
Mm.
They don't have to live a slave to fear.
Right.
But I got to admit, yeah, I'm afraid. People ask me in church, you know, you're afraid? It's like, I live afraid.
Yes.
I mean, every day I'm in over my head. I mean, the truth, every day you're over your head. It's like,
that's right.
You feel like you're every second, this is like way more than I can handle. It's not way more than God can handle.
Right. That's the
So you admit your weakness, you're bankrupt. I don't know. I don't have strength for this day, but God does.
We could, through admitting our weakness and having confidence in his strength, show the strength of God in ways that would cause others who see it to glorify God and not us. And that's really the goal of our life. And until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.